If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
Moments ago, if you were listening before the news, you heard me and a bunch of you talk about how difficult baby strollers are to open and close if your kids or grandkids have one of those new fancy ones that are terrific, but complicated for somebody who does not know how to operate them regularly. Hey, John, a friend of mine couldn't get her grandchild out of the car seat, so she cut the straps. Needless to say, the parents were not happy. John, I could not figure out how to collapse the stroller in the airport security line. A young dad ran up and closed it in a second. I'm a general contractor and build houses, but I could not figure this out. I told my daughter that I won't babysit unless she buys a portable umbrella stroller, says 779. And one more, my grandson's nanny and I took the kids to the zoo and we could not fold up the stroller to get it back in the car. We flagged down a couple of young moms and asked them to help. They looked it up on YouTube. Why is it so hard? I don't know why. You'd think in this day and age, if you're going to invest the, you know, technology, if you're going to build that thing, there's no point making it if you can't figure out how to use it. Now, obviously, the parents, it's probably like a lot of things. If you use it enough, it couldn't be more simple. But the learning curve is so steep, it is so not intuitive that they have to know this is an ongoing source of frustration for people. Eric Zorn, this is your future, my friend. I'm just telling you right now.
I'm cool with this stuff. I'm good with technology.
Oh, yeah, you say that. Have you tried to do one of these new baby strollers?
Not in a while, no. It's been about 25 years since we used baby strollers around this house.
Then you don't know. You don't know what's in store. Eric, it can't be done.
I'll adapt.
Eric Zorn joins us now, the Picayune Sentinel publisher. Yeah, hold on a second. You've read him a long time in the Chicago Tribune. Now he publishes a weekly newsletter called the Picayune Sentinel. He'll email it to you for free if you just email ericzorn@gmail.com. Pay a little bit for the premium subscription and you get extra cool bonus stuff. Eric's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel tomorrow. We'll be talking about the CEO of United Healthcare, for one thing, Brian Thompson, and the reaction from everybody to his murder. They have this Brian Thompson guy in custody now. What's your first thought about that story today, Eric?
Oh, yeah, it's not Brian Thompson is in custody. Yeah, he's the one who was murdered. Oh,
pardon me, Mangione. Yeah,
Mangione. I understand why people are angry. Extremely angry at the healthcare system, at the health insurance system. You know, a lot of people have been denied life-saving care by these companies, and they are angry. And they, you know, some of these people figuratively have blood on their hands. But as we all know, you know, murder and assassination is really not a way to solve a problem like this. And it's also, you know, if you endorse this, then you have to realize that those you disagree with may decide that murder and assassination is a tool that they're going to use. And that's just a road we don't want to go down at all. I mean, I understand the sympathies. I've dealt with health insurance companies myself. They're difficult to deal with and frustrating, maddening, infuriating. But this is just not the way to address
the
problem.
I think about this, though. If insurance companies, having heard this, let's just truly forget about the murder for a moment, but having heard how angry the public is, if they adjust their policies or practices, then it will be sort of validating the murder, that is, the murderer's action. It'll be saying, okay, because of that, we're going to be pushed into a position we would not have otherwise gone. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to empower or justify a killer for their motives, so you're inclined not to do that. But at the same time, doggone it, are you people listening? You've got to make it easier. You've got to make it more economical, and you've got to stop keeping all the money. I wonder what an insurance company is to do now.
Yeah, well, I mean, they obviously aren't going to react instantly to this these kind of things because it would, as you say, be seen as capitulating to violence, and you don't want to do that. It's you know, it's a form of hostage taking, I suppose, and not giving it. So, but yeah, I mean, the larger issue is one that's going to be brought to the fore, and also, you know, with incoming President-elect Donald Trump saying that he wants to get rid of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And replace it with something unspecified that may deny people coverage is something that's going to get people riled up about this all again. I mean, medical bankruptcy is a huge problem in the United States, and it's not a problem anywhere else in the world. And, you know, I'm a believer in an option that would fall into the rubric of Medicare for all that so that everyone can get covered for some basic healthcare needs. I mean, I believe that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, and a country as wealthy as ours ought to be able to care for its citizens. And I believe if you want to have private health insurance, I don't think that we have to get rid of private healthcare insurance if people want extras. But that at a basic level, healthcare needs to be provided.
At a basic level, but you know, I believe that the pursuit of health and happiness is fundamental. I don't know that free health care that costs millions of dollars is the same thing. I don't know where you draw that line. I like the rhetoric you're giving us here, Eric, but I also think as a practical matter, it's harder to do what you're saying than you make it sound.
It is. Though most countries in the developed world have managed to do
but
it.
In England, I just got this note from another listener. They said, okay, fine, so you need this surgery for something that was pretty important. The wait time was 3 years. So as long as you do have to wait for coverage or care in America, at least you're able to get it, I think, more immediately. Ask the people in Canada who have broken bones how long it takes to get it set or cast. I think our plan is at least a little more responsive.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, it's not an obvious trade-off. There are things like that. That's why having private health insurance on top of sort of a government basic level of insurance, and where that line is drawn is, of course, a really interesting question to ask. What sorts of surgeries should or treatments should be covered by a national healthcare plan? But there are so many examples from around the world, and you know, I'm not sure that people in Canada who break a bone have to wait to get it set. But there are other surgeries that are less urgent that they do have to wait longer for. But I don't, you know, I think it takes a good long look at the health outcomes of the population there to say, well, is this better? Is this a situation that we want? Is there a hybrid model that we can form?
Yeah.
Obamacare has been a pretty big success. I think there are like 13 million people on it, and that included my son until just recently. And certainly my brother-in-law has been on it for a long time, and it's been a godsend for them to have affordable health care that they didn't have before. And I think if you take that away from people, if you make them pay too much for it, it's going to engender a lot more anger.
You're surprised at how easy this kid was to identify sitting there at a McDonald's with all of the incriminating evidence a few days later still on him at a place where there's cameras, everybody's seen your nose and eyebrows and maybe your smile. It's weird that he, you know, was as clever as he was to pull this off, but as stupid as he was, makes you wonder if, in fact, he knew his capture wasn't inevitable and he wasn't trying that hard to forestall it.
I don't know. I mean, he was carrying something like $10,000 in cash, including several thousand dollars in foreign currency. He had, I think, some forged passports as well as some forged identification cards. And you know, dropping the backpack in Central Park, as he allegedly did with Monopoly money on it, and the words that he wrote on the shell casings that indicated that it was a targeted hit and a protest, suggested sort of a mastermind behind it, that he had really planned this out and that he was planning to get away. The idea that you would then go to McDonald's and hang out where people had seen you, I would think that he would have gone underground. He would have gone to the country.
And eat in. At least get back in whatever transportation you're using. I'm not trying to help out any would-be killers here.
Right.
It just makes no sense, though.
Yeah, no. I mean, originally, after a couple of days, I think a lot of us were thinking, well, this was really done. This was done by a very clever person. That this was, like I said, a mastermind. Someone had really planned out and had an escape route, an escape plan. I thought the guy was probably out of the country by now. And the fact that he's sitting in a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where he can be recognized, and I guess he must have been pulling down his mask to eat, because who would otherwise look at somebody in the middle of Pennsylvania having his breakfast at McDonald's and call the police? That seems very strange.
John, if this goes to trial, will it be difficult to get 12 jurors? I think we'll be able to get 12 jurors. I get the point that there's a lot of people. The McDonald's in Altoona got hate messages posted about them for having turned in this pseudo Robin Hood murderer suspect.
That's awful. It wasn't a customer who called it in, not the McDonald's personnel. I mean, my first thought it was an employee, but then I heard that it was a customer who saw him and called the police. So why would you pick on McDonald's?
Well, I've heard both versions of that, but that actually doesn't matter to the people that are posting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, the question that you're getting from listeners is there going to be jury nullification? Are you going to get one person on the jury who says, like, look, screw the healthcare companies, I'm not convicting this guy, no matter what the evidence shows? Because the evidence right now looks pretty strong. You think so. But could there be one person? And I don't think so. You don't see that very often. I mean, once in a while, especially on minor cases, you will see that where it's obvious that a person did something, but the jury sort of wants to nullify the law, wants to say that's not fair. I can't imagine that you would have 12 jurors who are sworn to uphold the law, sworn to follow the law, and to then lie about that to a judge and then acquit the guy. I mean, the best he could hope for would be a hung jury, certainly. And I think the state would continue to retry him until they got 12 people who would say, like, yeah, we don't like what the healthcare companies do, but this is not the answer.
You know, that's one of the questions the attorneys are going to ask the prospective jurors is, have you had a health claim? John, before Obamacare, I got a vasectomy. Everything approved, covered, got the surgery. Then the insurance called and said it was a pre-existing condition, so coverage was denied. A pre-existing condition? Well, yeah, that's why I got the vasectomy. I don't want that condition anymore. let's see here. John, I just got a quote for $250 a month, but with a $7,500 deductible. And that was just covering basic annual checkups. That's hardly affordable. So I will be going without insurance. The next text, a $7,500 deductible is hardly affordable to most people in an emergency, John.
Well, what Obamacare does is it insulates you from medical bankruptcy, unless $7,500 is going to bankrupt you. Insurance at that level is something that protects you against disaster, right? You don't insure your underwear at home. You insure your house, because if your underwear gets stolen or is burned, then you can replace it. You can afford to replace it. And the same thinking goes with something like Obamacare, which is like, yeah, for routine things, for less expensive things, yeah, you're going to have to pay for that. But if you get into a serious car accident or you have some really chronic long-term thing, you are covered after a certain deductible. And that, I mean, that's a safety net that is extremely important to a lot of people.
Eric Zorn, publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com to get on the list. You can get it for free and listen for us on the Mincing Rascals podcast, the podcast for people who care about Chicago. That drops tomorrow. Tina Svondelis in the Sun Crime says President-elect Donald Trump's border czar Tom Homan came to Chicago on Monday to implore Mayor Brandon Johnson and Governor Pritzker to come to the table and negotiate with him over mass deportation. The former acting head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement during Trump's first term began a 20-minute address at a Northwest Side holiday party, saying Chicago's in trouble because your mayor sucks and your governor sucks. Nothing screams the holidays like like that. He called both terrible and said that they should come to the table. Doesn't sound like the sort of invitation most people extend if they're serious about negotiating with the other side. But, Eric, then they say, look, we're going to round people up. And he literally says, we know exactly who we're coming to arrest. We know most likely where we're going to find them. We know a lot about them because of investigative case files. So it's not a sweep. It is not an uncontrolled operation. It is a very targeted operation. So there go your roofers and drywallers and landscapers. If they just, I mean, if I was an employer of those people, or if I was those people, I would be pretty nervous right now.
Yeah, opening gambit of saying that your mayor sucks and your governor sucks and let's sit down and talk, it's a pretty strange gambit.
Yes, I know.
It's like you want to, if you really want to try to get cooperation instead of just leading with your, leading with your fist like that. It was a very strange opening for his speech, and I don't believe him for a second that they know who they're going to go after. That, I mean, a lot of these people who are here without documentation are living in the shadows. There's not a lot of paper trail about them.
Oh, you don't think you could round up? I could make a phone call to a contractor. And I could be a dummy operation. I could be Operation Greylord. I could say, hey, listen, I want you to come and do this job for me. A truck would show up with a bunch of guys, and then the INS agents jump out of a van, and bingo, you've got them. I mean, they could do that. That's what they make it sound like they're going to do. And Eric, I want to finish this sentence, and I don't think they're going to do it. I think it's all bluster. Go ahead.
No, I think it's all bluster as well. I mean, you're talking about something that sounds like one of those sting operations that police have. Like, you win a trip, just come down to this Holiday Inn and come back behind the curtain, and we'll give you, and they get people who have violated parole and so on. There are certainly workplace raids that happened during the Trump administration, not a whole lot of them. I think what they want to do is they want to go after people who have been convicted, people here without documentation who have been convicted of crimes, hopefully serious crimes, not shoplifting or speeding or something like that. That may be what they do. And I don't think they're going to go a whole lot further than that because of how much money it will cost to actually put troops on the ground to process these people. And another point in his remarks, Cohen said that everyone's going to get due process of law. And that's going to be a nightmare of expense and time to get this done correctly, to get this done, in terms of how we follow the law. So I think there is a lot of bluster. But I don't understand it as a way of trying to get buy-in from people. You tell people like your mayor sucks, we say our mayor sucks, but you can't come in here. And
we know he sucks. It's like we're Cub fans. We get to knock the Cubs. People from St. Louis don't get to do that.
Go away. Yeah, exactly. So I think they're really going to do this? No, I think this is bluster. I think it's a way of firing up their base. I think when it's kind of like build the wall. When Trump talked all about, I'm going to build the wall, he ended up, building a few miles of wall and letting it go. This is something that's there to excite people, not actually going to be. He's not going to take families that are here, like the kids are citizens because they were born here, and remove the whole family. Or send
you know
them
what
all
it
back.
Sounds like is campaign talk. It's like Brandon Johnson, who's still throwing out these word salads of happy gobbledygook, and it's like, okay, that got you elected. Now you got to actually do it. What is it? You campaign in poetry, you govern in prose. So this Homan guy doesn't need to say that stuff now. You won. Now, really, how are you going to do it? And this is not a recipe for doing it.
Right. And it may impede his confirmation hearing if it comes to that. That when you're talking that tough, is that really what Republican senators in swing states or swing districts really want to have as their Homeland Security expert? I don't know. I mean, it does seem to me like it's an opening remark designed to set the terms of engagement here. But again, I don't think it's at all a serious proposal that the cost of actually doing this, of actually rounding up, 11-12 million people and deporting them would be enormous. And do we want to pay that? Is that going to bring the cost of living down? Is that what people really want in this country? I don't think so.
Well, if you are here undocumented or illegally, then we need to figure that out. But in the same breath, I'll also say that we kind of appreciate you being here because you're doing a lot of the work that we don't want to do. I'm not advocating for criminals, but I also think there's a lot of people here whose service we enjoy and appreciate, and we really don't care that much about their status. You and I will talk more about this with our friends on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow. Email ericzorn@gmail.com or just Google Picayune Sentinel. He's on Substack, and you can read his stuff there. Nice to talk to you, Mr. Zorn.
Good to talk to you, John. We'll see you Friday also at Tons of Good Cheer.
Oh, that's right. I'm up on the stage introducing you guys. That'll be a lot of fun. I've already picked out a red and green sweater.